Chapter 38. Practice. Sitting cross-legged on her bed in her white dress, Egwene made three tiny balls of light weave patterns above her hands. She was not supposed to do this without at least one of the accepted to supervise, but Nynaeve, glaring and striding up and down in front of the small fireplace, did after all wear the serpent ring given to the accepted, and her white dress had the colored rings encircling the hem, even if she was not allowed to try to teach anyone yet. And Egwene had found over these last 13 weeks that she could not resist. She knew how easy it was to touch Saidar now. She could always feel it there, waiting for her, like the smell of perfume or the feel of silk, drawing her, drawing her. And once she did touch it, she could rarely stop from channeling, or at least trying to. She failed almost as often as she succeeded, but that was only another spur to keep on. It often frightened her. How much she wanted to channel frightened her, and how drab and dreary she felt when she was not channeling compared to when she was. She wanted to drink it all in, despite the cautions about burning herself out, and that wanting frightened her most of all. Sometimes she wished she had never come to Tar Valon, but the fright could not make her stop for long, any more than the fear of being caught by an Aes Sedai or by any of the accepted beside Nynaeve. It was safe enough here, though, in her own room. Min was there, sitting on the three-legged stool watching her, but she knew Min well enough now to know Min would never report her. She thought she was lucky to have made two good friends since coming to Tar Valon. It was a little windowless room, as all novices' rooms were. Three short paces took Nynaeve from wall to white-plastered wall. Nynaeve's own room was much larger, but since she had made no friends among the other accepted, she came to Egwene's room when she needed someone to talk to, even as now when she did not talk at all. The tiny fire on the narrow hearth handily kept the first chill of approaching autumn at bay, though Egwene was sure it would not serve so well when winter came. A small table for study completed the furnishings, and her belongings hung neatly on a row of pegs on the wall or sat on the short shelf above the table. Novices were usually kept too busy to spend time in their rooms, but today was a free day, only the third since she and Nynaeve had come to the White Tower. Ailes was making calf eyes at Galad today while he was working with the warders, Min said, rocking the stool on two legs. The small balls faltered for an instant above Egwene's hands. "She can look at whoever she wants," Egwene said casually. "I can't imagine why I would be interested." "No reason, I suppose. He is awfully handsome, if you don't mind him being so rigid. Very nice to look at, especially with his shirt off." The balls spun furiously. "I certainly have no desire to look at Galad, with or without his shirt." "I shouldn't tease you," Min said contritely. "I'm sorry for that. But you do like to look at him. Don't grimace at me like that. And so does nearly every woman in the White Tower who isn't a red. I've seen Aes Sedai down at the practice yards when he's working forms, especially greens. Checking on their warders, they say, but I don't see so many when Galad isn't there. Even the cooks and maids come out to watch him." The balls stopped dead, and for a moment Egwene stared at them. They vanished. Suddenly she giggled. "He is good-looking, isn't he? Even when he walks, he looks as if he's dancing." The color in her cheeks deepened. "I know I shouldn't stare at him, but I can't help myself." "I can't either," Min said, "and I can see what he is like." "But if he is good..." "Egwene, Galad is so good he'd make you tear your hair out. He'd hurt a person because he had to serve a greater good. He wouldn't even notice who was hurt because he'd be so intent on the other, but if he did, he would expect them to understand and think it was all well and right." "I suppose you know," Egwene said. She had seen Min's ability to look at people and read all sorts of things about them. Min did not tell everything she saw, and she did not always see anything, but there had been enough for Egwene to believe. She glanced at Nynaeve. The other woman was still pacing, muttering to herself, then reached for Saidar again and resumed her juggling in a desultory fashion. Min shrugged. "I guess I might as well tell you. He didn't even notice what Ailes was doing. He asked her if she knew whether you might be walking the South Garden after supper, since today is a free day. I felt sorry for her. Poor Ailes, Egwene murmured, and the balls of light became more lively above her hands. Min laughed. The door banged open, caught by the wind. Egwene gave a yelp and let the balls vanish before she saw it was only Elaine. The golden-haired daughter heir of Andor pushed the door shut and hung up her cloak on a peg. I just heard, she said. The rumors are true. King Galdrion is dead. That makes it a war of succession. Min snorted. Civil war. War of succession. A lot of silly names for the same thing. Do you mind if we don't talk about it? That's all we hear. War in Kyrian. War on Toman Head. They may have caught the false dragon in Saldaea, but there's still war in Tyr. Most of it is rumors, anyway. Yesterday I heard one of the cooks saying she'd heard Artur Hawkwing was marching on Tunchico. Artur Hawkwing! I thought you did not want to talk about it, Egwene said. I saw Loghain, Elaine said. He was sitting on a bench in the inner court, crying. He ran when he saw me. I cannot help feeling sorry for him. Better he cries than the rest of us, Elaine, Min said. I know what he is, Elaine said calmly, or rather what he was. He isn't anymore, and I can feel sorry for him. Egwene slumped back against the wall. Rand. Loghain always made her think of Rand. She had not dreamed about him in months now, not the kind of dreams she had had on the River Queen. Anaya still made her write down everything she dreamed, and the Aes Sedai checked them for signs or connections to events, but there was never anything about Rand except dreams that, Anaya said, meant she missed him. Oddly, she felt almost as if he were not there any longer, as if he had ceased to exist along with her dreams a few weeks after reaching the White Tower. And I sit thinking about how nicely Galad walks, she thought bitterly. Rand has to be all right. If he'd been caught and gentled, I'd have heard something. That sent a chill through her, as it never failed to do, the thought of Rand being gentled, Rand weeping and wanting to die as Loghain did. Elaine sat down beside her on the bed, tucking her feet up under her. If you are mooning over Galad, Egwene, you will have no sympathy from me. I'll have Nynaeve dose you with one of those horrible concoctions she's always talking about. She frowned at Nynaeve, who had taken no notice of her entrance. What is the matter with her? Don't tell me she has started sighing after Galad, too. I wouldn't bother her. Min leaned toward the two of them and lowered her voice. That skinny accepted Irella told her she was as clumsy as a cow and had half the talents, and Nynaeve clouted her ear. Elaine winced. Exactly, Min murmured. They had her up to Shiriam's study before you could blink, and she hasn't been fit to live with since. Apparently Min had not dropped her voice enough, for there was a growl from Nynaeve. Suddenly the door whipped open once more, and a gale howled into the room. It did not ruffle the blankets on Egwene's bed, but Min and the stool toppled to roll against the wall. Immediately the wind died, and Nynaeve stood with a stricken look on her face. Egwene hurried to the door and peeked out. The noonday sun was burning off the last remainders of last night's rainstorm. The still damp balcony around the novices' court was empty, the long row of doors to novices' rooms all shut. The novices who had taken advantage of the free day to enjoy themselves in the gardens were no doubt catching up on their sleep. No one could have seen. She closed the door and took her place beside Elaine again as Nynaeve helped Min to her feet. I'm sorry, Min, Nynaeve said in a tight voice. Sometimes my temper... I can't ask you to forgive me, not for this. She took a deep breath. If you want to report me to Shiriam, I will understand. I deserve it. Egwene wished she had not heard that admission. Nynaeve could grow prickly over such things. Searching for something on which to focus, something Nynaeve could believe she had had her attention on, she found herself touching Saidar once more, and began juggling the balls of light again. Elaine quickly joined her. Egwene saw the glow form around the daughter heir even before three tiny balls appeared above her hands. They began to pass the little glowing spheres back and forth in increasingly intricate patterns. Sometimes one winked out, as one girl or the other failed to maintain it as it came to her, then winked back a little altered in color or size. The one power filled Egwene with life. She smelled the faint rose aroma of soap from Elaine's morning bath. She could feel the rough plaster of the walls, the smooth stones of the floor, as well as she could the bed where she sat. She could hear Min and Nynaeve breathe, much less their quiet words. "If it comes to forgiving," Min said, "maybe you should forgive me. You have a temper and I have a big mouth. I will forgive you if you forgive me." With murmurs of "forgiven" that sounded meant on both sides, the two women hugged. "But if you do it again," Min said with a laugh, "I might clout your ear." "Next time," Nynaeve replied, "I will throw something at you." She was laughing too, but her laughter ceased abruptly as her eye fell on Egwene and Elaine. "You two stop that, or there will be someone going to the Mistress of Novices. Two someones." "Nynaeve, you wouldn't," Egwene protested. When she saw the look in Nynaeve's eyes, though, she hastily severed all contact with Saidar. "Very well, I believe you. There's no need to prove it." "We have to practice," Elaine said. "They ask more and more of us. If we did not practice on our own, we would never keep up." Her face showed calm composure, but she had let go of Saidar as hastily as Egwene herself had. "And what happens when you draw too much?" Nynaeve asked. "And there's no one there to stop you." "I wish you were more afraid." "I am. Don't you think I know what it is like for you? It's always there, and you want to fill yourself with it. Sometimes it is all I can do to make myself stop. I want all of it. I know it would burn me to a crisp, and I want it anyway." She shivered. "I just wish you were more afraid." "I am afraid," Egwene said with a sigh. "I'm terrified, but it doesn't seem to help. What about you, Elaine?" "The only thing that terrifies me," Elaine said airily, "is washing dishes. It seems as if I have to wash dishes every day." Egwene threw her pillow at her. Elaine pulled it off her head and threw it back, but then her shoulders slumped. "Oh, very well. I am so scared I don't know why my teeth are not chattering. Elida told me I'd be so frightened that I would want to run away with the traveling people, but I did not understand. A man who drove oxen as hard as they drive us would be shunned. I'm tired all the time. I wake up tired and go to bed exhausted, and sometimes I'm so afraid that I will slip and channel more of the power than I can handle that I..." Peering into her lap, she let the words trail off. Egwene knew what she had not spoken. Their rooms lay right next to each other, and, as in many of the novice rooms, a small hole had long ago been bored through the wall between, too small to be seen unless you knew where to look, but useful for talk after the lamps were extinguished, when the girls could not leave their rooms. Egwene had heard Elaine crying herself to sleep more than once, and she had no doubt that Elaine had heard her own crying. "The traveling people are tempting," Nynaeve agreed. "But wherever you go, it will not change what you can do. You cannot run from Saidar." She did not sound as if she liked what she was saying. "What do you see, Min?" Elaine said. "Are we all going to be powerful Aes Sedai? Or will we spend the rest of our lives washing dishes as novices? Or..." She shrugged uncomfortably, as if she did not want to voice the third alternative that came to mind. "Sent home. Put out of the tower. Two novices had been put out since Egwene came, and everyone spoke of them in whispers, as if they were dead." Min shifted on her stool. "I don't like reading friends," she muttered. "Friendship gets in the way of the reading. It makes me try to put the best face on what I see. That's why I don't do it for you three anymore. Anyway, nothing has changed about you that I can..." She squinted at them and suddenly frowned. "That's new," she breathed. "What?" Nynaeve asked sharply. Min hesitated before answering. "Danger. You are all in some kind of danger. Or you will be very soon. I can't make it out, but it is danger." "You see," Nynaeve said to the two girls sitting on the bed, "you must take care. We all must. You must both promise not to channel again without someone to guide you. I don't want to talk about it anymore, Egwene said. Elaine nodded eagerly. Yes, let's talk about something else. Min, if you put on a dress, I'll wager Gawain would ask you to go walking with him. You know he's been looking at you, but I think the breeches and the man's coat put him off. I dress the way I like, and I won't change for a lord, even if he is your brother. Min spoke absently, still squinting at them and frowning. It was a conversation they had had before. Sometimes it is useful to pass as a boy. No one who looks twice believes you are a boy, Elaine smiled. Egwene was uncomfortable. Elaine was forcing a semblance of gaiety, Min was hardly paying attention, and Nynaeve looked as if she wanted to warn them again. When the door swung open once more, Egwene bounded to her feet to close it, grateful for something to do besides watch the others pretend. Before she reached it, an Aes Sedai with her blonde hair done in a multitude of braids stepped into the room. Egwene blinked in surprise, as much at it being any Aes Sedai as at Leandrin. She had not heard that Leandrin had returned to the White Tower, but beyond that, novices were sent for if an Aes Sedai wanted them. It could mean no good a sister coming herself. The room was crowded with 5 women in it. Leandrin paused to adjust her red-fringed shawl, eyeing them. Min did not move, but Elaine rose, and the 3 standing curtsied, though Nynaeve barely flexed her knee. Egwene did not think Nynaeve would ever grow used to having others in authority over her. Leandrin's eyes settled on Nynaeve. And why are you here in the novices' quarters, child? Her tone was ice. I'm visiting with friends, Nynaeve said in a tight voice. After a moment, she added a belated, Leandrin Sedai. The accepted, they can have no friends among the novices. This you should have learned by this time, child. But it is as well that I find you here. You and you, her finger stabbed at Elaine and Min, will go. I will return later, Min rose casually, making a great show of being in no hurry to obey, and strolled by Leandrin with a grin, of which Leandrin took no notice at all. Elaine gave Egwene and Nynaeve a worried look before she dropped a curtsy and left. After Elaine closed the door behind her, Leandrin stood studying Egwene and Nynaeve. Egwene began to fidget under the scrutiny, but Nynaeve held herself straight, with only a little heightening of her color. You two are from the same village as the boys who traveled with Moiraine, is it not so? Leandrin said suddenly. Do you have some word of Rand? Egwene asked eagerly. Leandrin arched an eyebrow at her. Forgive me, Aes Sedai, I forget myself. Have you word of them? Nynaeve said, just short of a demand. The accepted had no rule about not speaking to an Aes Sedai until spoken to. You have concern for them. That is good. They are in danger and you might be able to help them. How do you know they're in trouble? There was no doubt about the demand in Nynaeve's voice this time. Leandrin's rosebud mouth tightened, but her tone did not change. Though you are not aware of it, Moiraine has sent letters to the White Tower concerning you. Moiraine said she worries about you and about your young friends. These boys, they are in danger. Do you wish to help them or leave them to their fate? Yes, Egwene said, at the same time that Nynaeve said, what kind of trouble? Why do you care about helping them? Nynaeve glanced at the red fringe on Leandrin's shawl. And I thought you didn't like Moiraine. Do not presume too much, child, Leandrin said sharply. To be accepted is not to be a sister. Accepted and novices alike listen when a sister speaks and do as they are told. She drew a breath and went on. Her tone was coldly serene again, but angry white spots marred her cheeks. Someday, I am sure, you will serve a cause, and you will learn then that to serve it you must work even with those whom you dislike. I tell you I have worked with many with whom I would not share a room if it were left to me alone. Would you not work alongside the one you hated worst if it would save your friends? Nynaeve nodded reluctantly. But you still haven't told us what kind of danger they're in. Leandrin said I. The danger comes from Shael Ghul. They are hunted, as I understand they once before were. If you will come with me, some dangers at least may be eliminated. Do not ask how, for I cannot tell you, but I tell you flatly it is so. We will come, Leandrin Sedai, Egwene said. Come where? Nynaeve said. Egwene shot her an exasperated look. Toman Head. Egwene's mouth fell open, and Nynaeve muttered, There's a war on Toman Head. Does this danger have something to do with Arthur Hawkwing's armies? You believe rumors, child? But even if they were true, is that enough to stop you? I thought you called these men friends. A twist to Leandrin's words said she would never do the same. We will come, Egwene said. Nynaeve opened her mouth again, but Egwene went right on. We will go, Nynaeve. If Rand needs our help, and Matt and Perrin, we have to give it. I know that, Nynaeve said. But what I want to know is, why us? What can we do that Moiraine or you, Leandrin, cannot? The white grew in Leandrin's cheeks. Egwene realized Nynaeve had forgotten the honorific in addressing her, but what she said was, You two come from their village. In some way I do not entirely understand, you are connected to them. Beyond that I cannot say, and no more of your foolish questions will I answer. Will you come with me for their sake? She paused for their assent. A visible tension left her when they nodded. Good. You will meet me at the northernmost edge of the Ogier Grove 1 hour before sunset with your horses and whatever you will need for the journey. Tell no one of this. We are not supposed to leave the tower grounds without permission, Nynaeve said slowly. You have my permission. Tell no one. No one at all. The Black Aja walks the halls of the White Tower. Egwene gasped and heard an echoed gasp from Nynaeve, but Nynaeve recovered quickly. I thought all Aes Sedai denied the existence of that. Leandrin's mouth tightened into a sneer. Many do, but Tarmon Gaidon approaches, and the time leaves when denials can be made. The Black Aja, it is the opposite of everything for which the tower stands, but it exists, child. It is everywhere. Any woman could belong to it, and it serves the Dark One. If your friends are pursued by the Shadow, do you think the Black Aja will leave you alive and free to help them? Tell no one, no one, or you may not live to reach Toman Head. 1 hour before sunset. Do not fail me. With that, she was gone, the door closing firmly behind her. Egwene collapsed onto her bed with her hands on her knees. Nynaeve, she's Red Aja. She can't know about Rand. If she did, she cannot know, Nynaeve agreed. I wish I knew why a Red wanted to help, or why she's willing to work with Moiraine. I'd have sworn neither of them would give the other water if she were dying of thirst. You think she's lying?
She is Aes Sedai, Nynaeve said dryly. I'll wager my best silver pin against a blueberry that every word she said was true. But I wonder if we heard what we thought we did.
The Black Aja, Egwene shivered. There was no mistaking what she said about that, the light help us.
No mistaking, Nynaeve said. And she's forestalled us asking anyone for advice, because after that, who can we trust? The light help us indeed.
Min and Elaine came bustling in, slamming the door behind them. Are you really going? Min asked, and Elaine gestured toward the tiny hole in the wall above Egwene's bed, saying, We listened from my room. We heard everything. Egwene exchanged glances with Nynaeve, wondering how much they had overheard, and saw the same concern on Nynaeve's face. If they managed to cipher out about Rand...
You have to keep this to yourselves, Nynaeve cautioned them. I suppose Leandrin has arranged permission from Shiriam for us to go, but even if she hasn't, even if they start searching the tower from top to bottom for us tomorrow, you mustn't say a word.
Keep it to myself, Min said. No fear on that. I'm going with you. All I do all day is try to explain to one brown sister or another something I don't understand myself. I can't even go for a walk without the Amarlin herself popping out and asking me to read whoever we see. When that woman asks you to do something,
There doesn't seem to be any way out of it. I must have read half the White Tower for her, but she always wants another demonstration. All I needed was an excuse to leave, and this is it." Her face wore a look of determination that allowed no argument. Egwene wondered why Min was so determined to go with them rather than simply leaving on her own, but before she had time to do more than wonder, Elaine said, "I'm going too." "Elaine," Nynaeve said gently, "Egwene and I are the boys Kith from Emmons Field. You are the daughter heir of Andor. If you disappear from the White Tower, why, it could start a war."
"Mother wouldn't start a war with Tar Valon if they dried and salted me, which they may be trying to do. If you three can go off and have an adventure, you needn't think I'm going to stay here and wash dishes and scrub floors and have some accepted berating me because I didn't make the fire the exact shade of blue she wanted. Gawain will die from envy when he finds out." Elaine grinned and reached over to tug playfully at Egwene's hair. "Besides, if you leave Rand lying about loose, I might have a chance to pick him up."
"I don't think either of us is going to have him," Egwene said sadly.
"Then we'll find whoever he does choose and make her life miserable. But he couldn't be fool enough to choose someone else when he could have one of us.
Oh, please smile, Egwene. I know he's yours. I just feel..."
She hesitated, searching for the word.
"Free. I've never had an adventure. I'll bet we won't either of us cry ourselves to sleep on an adventure. And if we do, we will make sure the Gleemen leave that part out."
"This is foolishness," Nynaeve said. "We are going to Toman Head. You've heard the news and the rumors. It will be dangerous. You must stay here."
"I heard what Leandrin Sedai said about the Black Aja, too."
Elaine's voice dropped almost to a whisper at that name.
"How safe will I be here, if they are here? If Mother even suspected the Black Aja really existed, she would pitch me into the middle of a battle to get me away from them."
"But, Elaine, there is only one way for you to stop me coming. That is to tell the Mistress of Novices. We will make a pretty picture, all three of us lined up in her study. All four of us. I don't think Min would escape from something like this. So since you are not going to tell Shiri Am Sedai, I'm coming too."
Nynaeve threw up her hands.
"Perhaps you can say something to convince her," she told Min.
Min had been leaning against the door, squinting at Elaine, and now she shook her head.
"I think she has to come as much as the rest of you, the rest of us. I can see the danger around all of you more clearly now. Not clearly enough to make it out, but I think it has something to do with you deciding to go. That's why it is clearer, because it is more certain."
"That's no reason for her to come," Nynaeve said, but Min shook her head again.
"She is linked to those boys as much as you or Egwene or me. She's part of it, Nynaeve, whatever it is. Part of the pattern, I suppose an Aes Sedai would say."
Elaine seemed taken aback and interested, too.
"I am? What part, Min?"
"I can't see it clearly." Min looked at the floor.
"Sometimes I wish I couldn't read people at all. Most people aren't satisfied with what I see anyway."
"If we are all going," Nynaeve said, "then we had best be about making plans." However much she might argue beforehand, once a course of action had been decided, Nynaeve always went right to the practicalities, what they had to take with them, and how cold it would be by the time they reached Toman Head, and how they could get their horses from the stables without being stopped. Listening to her, Egwene could not help wondering what the danger was that Min saw for them, and what danger threatened Rand. She knew of only one danger that could threaten him, and it made her cold to think of it.
"Hold on, Rand. Hold on, you wool-headed idiot. I'll help you somehow."
Chapter 39. Flight from the White Tower. Egwene and Elaine inclined their heads briefly to each group of women they passed as they made their way through the tower. It was a good thing there were so many women from outside in the tower today, Egwene thought. Too many for each to have an Aes Sedai or an accepted for escort. Alone or in small groups, garbed richly or poorly, in dress from half a dozen different lands, Some still dusty from their journey to Tar Valon, they kept to themselves and waited their turn to ask their questions of the Aes Sedai or present their petitions. Some women, ladies or merchants' wives, had female servants with them. Even a few men had come with petitions, standing by themselves, looking unsure about being in the White Tower and eyeing everyone else uneasily. In the lead, Nynaeve kept her eyes purposefully ahead, her cloak swirling behind her, walking as if she knew where they were going, which she did, as long as no one stopped them, and had a perfect right to go there, which was a different matter altogether, of course. Dressed now in the clothes they had brought to Tar Valon, they certainly did not look like residents of the tower. Each had chosen her best dress that had a skirt divided for riding, and cloaks of fine wool, rich with embroidery. As long as they kept away from all who might recognize them, they had already dodged several who knew their faces. Egwene thought they might make it. "This would do better for a turn in some lord's park than a ride to Toman Head," Nynaeve had said dryly as Egwene helped her with the buttons of a gray silk with thread of gold work and pearled flowers across the bosom and down the sleeves. "But it may allow us to leave unnoticed." Now Egwene shifted her cloak and smoothed her own gold-embroidered green silk dress and glanced at Elaine, in blue slashed with cream, hoping Nynaeve had been right. So far, everyone had taken them for petitioners, nobles, or at least women of wealth, but it seemed that they should stand out. She was surprised to realize why. She felt uncomfortable in the fine dress after wearing a novice's plain white for the past few months. A little cluster of village women in stout, dark woolens dropped curtsies as they passed. Egwene glanced back at Min as soon as they were beyond. Min had kept her breeches and baggy man's shirt under a boy's brown cloak and coat, with an old wide-brimmed hat pulled down over her short hair. "One of us has to be the servant," she had said, laughing. "Women dressed the way you are always have at least one. You'll wish you had my breeches if we have to run." She was burdened with four sets of saddlebags bulging with warm clothes, for it would surely be winter before they returned. There were also packets of food pilfered from the kitchens, enough to last until they could buy more. "Are you sure I can't carry some of those, Min?" Egwene asked softly. "They're just awkward," Min said with a grin. "Not heavy." She seemed to think it was all a game, or else was pretending to think so. And people would be sure to wonder why a fine lady such as yourself was carrying her own saddlebags. "You can carry yours, and mine too, if you want, once we—" Her grin vanished, and she whispered fiercely, "Aes Sedai!" Egwene whipped her eyes forward. An Aes Sedai with long, smooth black hair and aged ivory skin was coming toward them down the corridor, listening to a woman wearing rough farm clothes and a patched cloak. The Aes Sedai had not seen them yet, but Egwene recognized her. Takima, of the Brown Aja, who taught the history of the White Tower and Aes Sedai, and who could recognize one of her pupils at 100 paces. Nynaeve turned down a side hall without breaking stride, but there one of the accepted, a lanky woman with a permanent frown, hurried past them, hauling a red-faced novice by the ear. Egwene had to swallow before she could speak. "That was Irella and Els. Did they notice us?" She could not make herself look back to see. "No," Min said after a moment. "All they saw was our clothes." Egwene let out a long, relieved breath and heard one from Nynaeve, too. "My heart may burst before we reach the stables," Elaine murmured. "Is this what an adventure is like all the time, Egwene? Your heart in your mouth and your stomach in your feet?" "I suppose it is," Egwene said slowly. She found it hard to think that there had been a time when she had been eager to have an adventure, to do something dangerous and exciting like the people in stories. Now she thought the exciting part was what you remembered when you looked back, and the stories left out a good deal of unpleasantness. She told Elaine as much. "Still," the daughter heir said firmly, "I have never had any real excitement before, and never likely to as long as Mother has any say in it, which she will until I take the throne myself." "You two be quiet," Nynaeve said. They were alone in the hall for a change, with no one in sight in either direction. She pointed to a narrow flight of stairs going down. That should be what we want, if I haven't gotten turned around completely with all the twists and turns we've made. She took the stairs as if she were certain anyway, and the others followed. Surely enough, the small door at the bottom led out into the dusty yard of the south stable, where novices' horses were kept, for those who had them, until they had need of mounts again, which was generally not until they became accepted or were sent home. The gleaming bulk of the tower itself rose behind them. The tower grounds spread over a good many hides of land, with its own walls higher than some city walls. Nynaeve strode into the stable as if she owned it. It had a clean smell of hay and horse, and two long rows of stalls ran back into shadows barred with light from the vents above. For a wonder, Shaggy, Bella, and Nynaeve's gray mare stood in stalls near the doors. Bella put her nose over the stall door and whickered softly to Egwene. There was only one groom in evidence, a pleasant-looking fellow with gray in his beard, chewing a straw. "We will have our horses saddled," Nynaeve told him in her most commanding tone. "Those two. Men, find your horse and Elaine's." Men dropped the saddlebags and drew Elaine deeper into the stables. The stableman frowned after them and slowly took the straw from his mouth. "There must be some mistake, my lady. Those animals are ours," Nynaeve said firmly, folding her arms so that the serpent ring was obvious. "You will saddle them now." Egwene held her breath. It was a last-ditch plan that Nynaeve would try to pass as an Aes Sedai if they had difficulties with anyone who might actually accept her as one. No Aes Sedai or accepted would, of course, and probably not even a novice. But a stableman... The man blinked at Nynaeve's ring, then at her. "I was told, too," he said at last, sounding unimpressed. "One of the accepted and a novice. Wasn't nothing said about four of you." Egwene felt like laughing. Of course Leandrin would not have believed them able to get their horses by themselves. Nynaeve looked disappointed, and her voice sharpened. "You trot those horses out and saddle them, or you'll have need of Leandrin's healing, if she will give it to you." The groom mouthed Leandrin's name, but one look at Nynaeve's face and he saw to the horses with no more than a mutter or two, not loud enough for any but himself to hear. Min and Elaine came back with their own mounts just as he finished tightening the second girth. Min's was a tall, dust-colored gelding, Elaine's a bay mare with an arched neck. When they were mounted, Nynaeve addressed herself to the stableman again. "No doubt you were told to keep this quiet, and that hasn't changed whether we are 2 or 200. If you think it has, think about what Leandrin will do if you talk what you were told to keep quiet." As they were riding out, Elaine tossed him a coin and murmured, "For your trouble, good man, you have done well." Outside, she caught Egwene's eye and smiled. "Mother says a stick and honey always work better than a stick alone." "I hope we don't need either with the guards," Egwene said. "I hope Leandrin spoke to them, too." At Tarloman's gate, though, piercing the tall south wall of the tower grounds, there was no telling if anyone had spoken to the guards or not. They waved the four women through with no more than a glance and a cursory bow. Guards were meant to keep out those who were dangerous. Apparently these had no orders about keeping anyone in. A cool river breeze gave them an excuse to pull up the hoods of their cloaks as they rode slowly through the streets of the city. The ring of their horses' hooves on the paving stones was lost in the murmur of the crowds filling the streets and the music that came from some of the buildings they passed. People dressed in garments from every land, from the dark and somber mood of Kyrian to the bright, brilliant colors of the traveling people, and every style in between split around the horsewomen like a river around a rock, but they still could not move at more than a slow walk. Egwene gave no attention to the fabulous towers with their sky-borne bridges or the buildings that looked more like breaking waves or wind-sculpted cliffs or fanciful shells than anything made from stone. Aes Sedai often went into the city, and in that crowd they could come face to face with one before they knew it. After a time she realized the other women were keeping as close a watch as she, but she still felt more than a glimmer of relief when the Ogier Grove came into view. The great trees were now visible beyond the rooftops, their spreading tops 100 spans and more in the air. Towering oaks and elms, leather leaves and firs were dwarfed beneath them. A wall of sorts encompassed the grove, which was a good 2 miles across, but it was only an endless series of spiraling stone arches, each 5 spans high and twice as wide. By the outer side of the wall, carriages, carts, and people bustled along a street, while inside lay a wilderness of sorts. The grove had neither the tame look of a park nor the complete haphazardness of the forest depths. Rather, it seemed to be the ideal of nature, as if this were the perfect woods, the most beautiful forest that could be. Some of the leaves had already begun to turn, and even the small swaths of orange and yellow and red among the green seemed to Egwene to be exactly the way autumn foliage should look. A few people strolled just inside the open arches, and no one looked twice when the 4 women rode in under the trees. The city was quickly lost to view, even the sounds of it softened, then blocked, by the grove. In the space of 10 strides they seemed to be miles from the nearest town. "The north end of the grove," she said, Nynaeve muttered, peering around. "There isn't any point of it further north than—" She cut off as 2 horses burst from a copse of black elder, a dark glossy mare with a rider and a lightly laden packhorse. The dark mare reared, pawing the air as Leandrin reined her harshly. The Aes Sedai's face wore fury like a mask. "I told you not to tell anyone of this. Not anyone." Egwene noticed pole lanterns on the packhorse and thought it odd. "These are friends," Nynaeve began, her back stiffening, but Elaine broke in on her. "Forgive us, Leandrin Sedai. They did not tell us. We overheard. We did not mean to listen to anything we should not have, but we did overhear. And we want to help Randall Thor, too. And the other boys, of course," she added quickly. Leandrin peered at Elaine and Min. The late afternoon sunlight slanting through the branches shadowed their faces beneath the hoods of their cloaks. "So," she said finally, still watching those two, "I had made arrangements for you to be taken care of, but as you are here, you are here. 4 can make this journey as well as 2.
"Taken care of, Leandrin Sedai," Elaine said. "I do not understand."
"Child, you and that other are known as friends of these 2. Do you not think that there are those who would question you when they are found to be gone? Do you believe the Black Aja would be gentle with you just because you are heir to a throne? Had you remained in the White Tower, you might not have lived the night." That silenced them all for a moment, but Leandrin wheeled her horse and called, "Follow me." The Aes Sedai led them deeper into the grove until they came to a tall fence of stout ironwork, topped with a hedge of razor-sharp spikes. Curving slightly as if it enclosed a large area, the fence ran out of sight among the trees to left and right. There was a gate in the fence secured with a big lock. Leandrin unfastened this with a large key she produced from her cloak, motioned them through, then relocked it behind them and rode on ahead immediately. A squirrel chittered at them from a branch overhead, and from somewhere came the sharp drumming of a woodpecker. "Where are we going?" Nynaeve demanded. Leandrin did not answer, and Nynaeve looked angrily at the others. "Why are we just riding deeper into these woods? We have to cross a bridge or else take ship if we're going to leave Tar Valon, and there isn't any bridge or ship in—"
"There is this," Leandrin announced.
"The fence, it keeps away those who might harm themselves, but we have a need this day." What she gestured to was a tall, thick slab of what seemed to be stone, standing on edge, one side carved intricately in vines and leaves. Egwene's throat tightened. Suddenly she knew why Leandrin had brought lanterns, and she did not like what she knew. She heard Nynaeve whisper, "A waygate." They both remembered the ways all too well.
"We did it once," she told herself as much as Nynaeve. "We can do it again. If Rand and the others need us, we have to help them. That's all there is to it."
"Is that really—" Min began in a choked voice and could not finish.
"A waygate," Elaine breathed. I did not think the ways could be used any longer. At least I did not think their use was allowed.
Leandrin had already dismounted and plucked the trefoil of Endosaura leaf out of the carving. Like two huge doors woven of living vines, the gates were swinging open, revealing what appeared to be a dull, silvery mirror that gave their reflections back dimly.
You do not have to come, Leandrin said. You can wait here for me, safely enclosed by the fence until I come for you. Or perhaps the Black Aja will find you before anyone else.
Her smile was not pleasant. Behind her, the way gate came open to its fullest and stopped.
I did not say I wouldn't come,
Elaine said, but she gave the shadowed woods a lingering look.
If we are going to do this, Min said hoarsely, then let's do it.
She was staring at the way gate, and Egwene thought she heard her mutter, The light burn you, Randalthor.
I must go last, Leandrin said. All of you in, I will follow.
She was eyeing the woods now, too, as if she thought someone might be following them.
Quickly, quickly!
Egwene did not know what Leandrin expected to see, but if anyone at all came, they would probably stop them from using the waygate.
Rand, you wool-headed idiot, she thought. Why can't you just once get yourself into some kind of trouble that doesn't force me to act like the heroine in a story?
She dug her heels into Bella's flanks, and the shaggy mare, restive from too much time in a stable, leaped forward.
Slowly!
Nynaeve shouted, but it was too late. Egwene and Bella surged toward their own dull reflections. Two shaggy horses touched noses, appeared to flow into each other. Then Egwene was merging into her own image with an icy shock. Time seemed to stretch out, as if the cold crept over her by the width of one hair at a time, and every hair took minutes. Suddenly, Bella was stumbling in pitch blackness, moving so fast the mare almost pitched over on her head. She caught herself and stood trembling as Egwene dismounted hurriedly, feeling the mare's legs in the dark to see if she had been hurt. She was almost glad of the dark to hide her crimson face. She knew that time as well as distance were different the other side of a waygate. She had moved before thinking. There was only the blackness around her in every direction, except for the rectangle of the open waygate, like a window of smoked glass when seen from this side. It let no light in, the black seemed to press right up against it, but through it Egwene could see the others, moving by the slowest increments like figures in a nightmare. Nynaeve was insisting on handing around the pole lanterns and lighting them. Leandrin was acceding with a bad grace, apparently insisting on speed. When Nynaeve came through the way gate, leading her gray mare slowly, ever so slowly, Egwene almost ran to hug her, and at least half of her feeling was for the lantern Nynaeve carried. The lantern made a smaller pool of light than it should have. The darkness pressed against the light, trying to force it back into the lantern, but Egwene had begun to feel that darkness pressing against her as if it had weight. Instead, she contented herself with saying, Bella's all right, and I did not break my neck the way I deserved to. Once there had been light along the ways before the taint on the power with which they had first been made, the taint of the Dark One on Sidene, had begun to corrupt them. Nynaeve thrust the pole of the lantern into her hands and turned to pull another from under her saddle girth.
As long as you know you deserve to, she murmured, then you didn't deserve to.
Suddenly she chuckled.
Sometimes I think it was sayings like that more than anything else that created the title of wisdom.
Well, here's another. You break your neck and I'll see it mended just so I can break it again. It was said lightly and Egwene found herself laughing too, until she recalled where she was. Nynaeve's amusement did not last long either.
Min and Elaine came through the waygate hesitantly, leading their horses and carrying lanterns, obviously expecting to find monsters waiting at the least. They looked relieved at first to find nothing but darkness, but the oppressiveness of it soon had them shifting nervously from foot to foot. Leandrin replaced the Evendosaura leaf and rode through the closing waygate leading the packhorse. Leandrin did not wait for the gate to finish closing, but tossed the lead line of the packhorse to Min without a word and started along a white line, dimly made out by the light of her lantern, leading into the ways.
The floor seemed to be stone, eaten and pitted by acid. Egwene scrambled hurriedly onto Bella's back, but she was no quicker to follow the Aes Sedai than anyone else. There seemed to be nothing in the world except the rough floor under the horse's hooves. Straight as an arrow, the white line led through the dark to a large stone slab covered with Ogier script inlaid in silver. The same pocking that marked the floor also broke the script in places. "A guiding," Elaine murmured, twisting in her saddle to look around uneasily. "Elida taught me a little about the ways. She would not say much. Not enough," she added glumly. "Or maybe too much." Calmly, Leandrin compared the guiding with a parchment, then stuffed it back into a pocket of her cloak before Egwene could get a look. Their lantern's light stopped abruptly rather than fading out at the edges, but it was enough for Egwene to see a thick stone balustrade eaten away in places as the Aes Sedai led them away from the guiding. An island, Elaine called it. The darkness made judging the island's size difficult, but Egwene thought it might be 100 paces across. Stone bridges and ramps pierced the balustrade, each with a stone post beside it marked with a single line in Ogier script. The bridges seemed to arch out into nothing. The ramps led up or down. It was impossible to see more than the beginning of any of them as they rode past. Pausing only to eye the stone posts, Leandrin took a ramp that led down, and quickly there was nothing but the ramp and the darkness. A dampening silence hung over everything. Egwene had the feeling that even the clatter of the horse's hooves on the rough stone did not travel very far beyond the light. Down and down the ramp ran, curving back on itself, until it reached another island, with its broken balustrade between bridges and ramps, its guiding that Leandrin compared with her parchment. The island seemed like solid stone, just as the first one had. Egwene wished she was not sure that the first island was directly over their heads. Nynaeve spoke up suddenly, voicing Egwene's thoughts. Her voice sounded steady, but she paused to swallow in the middle of it.
It might be, Elaine said faintly.
Her eyes rolled upwards and quickly dropped again.
Elida says the rules of nature do not hold in the ways, at least not the way they do outside.
Light, Min muttered, then raised her voice.
How long do you mean us to stay in here?
The Aes Sedai's honey-colored braids swung as she turned to regard them.
Until I take you out, she said flatly. The more you bother me, the longer that will be.
She bent back to studying the parchment and the guiding. Egwene and the others fell silent. Leandrin pushed on from guiding to guiding, by ramps and bridges that seemed to run unsupported through the endless dark. The Aes Sedai paid very little heed to the rest of them, and Egwene found herself wondering whether Leandrin would turn back to search if one of them fell behind. The others perhaps had the same thought, for they all rode bunched tightly on the dark mare's heels. Egwene was surprised to realize that she still felt the attraction of Saidar, both the presence of the female half of the true source and the desire to touch it, to channel its flow. Somehow she had thought the shadow's taint on the ways would hide it from her. She could sense that taint after a fashion. It was faint and had nothing to do with Saidar, but she was sure that reaching for the true source here would be like baring her arm to foul, greasy smoke in order to reach a clean cup. Whatever she did would be tainted. For the first time in weeks, she had no trouble at all in resisting the attraction of Saidar. It was well into what would have been night in the world outside the ways when, on an island, Leandrin abruptly dismounted and announced that they would halt for supper and sleep, and that there was food on the packhorse. "Parcel it out," she said, not bothering to assign the task. "It will take us the better part of 2 days to reach Toman Head. I would not have you arrive hungry if you were too foolish not to bring food yourselves." Briskly, she unsaddled and hobbled her mare, but then she sat down on her saddle and waited for one of them to bring her something to eat. Elaine took Leandrin her flatbread and cheese. The Aes Sedai made it obvious that she did not want their company, so the rest of them ate their bread and cheese a little apart from her, sitting on their saddles drawn close together. The darkness beyond their lanterns made a poor sauce. After a time, Egwene said, Leandrin Sedai, what if we encounter the black wind?
Min mouthed the word questioningly, but Elaine gave a squeak.
Moiraine Sedai said it could not be killed or even hurt very much, and I can feel the taint on this place waiting to twist anything we do with the power.
You will not so much as think of the source unless I tell you to, Leandrin said sharply. Why, if one such as you tried to channel here in the ways, you might well go as mad as a man. You have not the training to deal with the taint of those men who made this. If the black wind appears, I will deal with it.
She pursed her lips, studying a lump of white cheese.
Moiraine does not know so much as she thinks.
She popped the cheese into her mouth with a smile.
I do not like her, Egwene muttered, low enough to make sure the Aes Sedai could not hear.
If Moiraine can work with her, Nynaeve said quietly, so can we. Not that I like Moiraine any better than I do Leandrin, but if they're meddling with Rand and the others again...
She fell silent, hitching her cloak up. The darkness was not cold, but it seemed as if it should be.
What is this black wind? Min asked.
When Elaine had explained, with a great deal of what Elida had said and what her mother had said, Min sighed.
The pattern has a great deal to answer for. I don't know that any man is worth this.
You did not have to come, Egwene reminded her. You could have gone at any time. No one would have tried to stop you leaving the tower.
Oh, I could have wandered off, Min said wryly, as easily as you or Elaine. The pattern doesn't much care what we want.
Egwene, what if, after all you are going through for him, Rand doesn't marry you? What if he marries some woman you've never seen before, or Elaine, or me? What then?
Elaine chortled. Mother would never approve.
Egwene was silent for a time. Rand might not live to marry anyone, and if he did, she could not imagine Rand hurting anyone.
Not even after he's gone mad?
There had to be some way to stop that, some way to change it. Aes Sedai knew so much, could do so much. If they could stop it, why don't they? The only answer was because they could not, and that was not the one she wanted.
She tried to put lightness in her voice.
I don't suppose I will marry him. Aes Sedai seldom do marry, you know. But I would not set my heart on him if I were you, or you, Elaine.
I do not think...
Her voice caught, and she coughed to cover it.
I do not think he will ever marry. But if he does, I wish well to whoever ends up with him, even one of you.
She thought she sounded as if she meant it.
He is stubborn as a mule and wrong-headed to a fault, but he is gentle.
Her voice shook, but she managed to turn the quaver into a laugh.
However much you say you do not care, Elaine said, I think you'd approve less than Mother would. He is interesting, Egwene. More interesting than any man I've ever met, even if he is a shepherd. If you are silly enough to throw him away, you will have only yourself to blame if I decide to face down you and Mother both. It would not be the first time the Prince of Andor had no title before he wed. But you won't be that silly, so don't try to pretend you will. No doubt you will choose the green Aja and make him one of your warders. The only greens I know with only one warder are married to them.
Egwene made herself go along with it, saying if she did become a green, she would have 10 warders.
Min watched her, frowning, and Nynaeve watched Min thoughtfully. They all fell silent by the time they changed into more suitable clothes for traveling from their saddlebags. It was not easy keeping spirits up in that place.
Sleep came slowly to Egwene, fitfully, and it was filled with bad dreams. She did not dream of Rand, but of the man whose eyes were on fire. His face was not masked this time, and it was horrible with almost healed burns. He only looked at her and laughed, but that was worse than the dreams that followed, the dreams of being lost in the ways forever, the ones where the black wind was chasing her. She was grateful when the toe of Leandrin's riding boot dug into her ribs to waken her. She felt as if she had not slept at all. Leandrin pushed them hard through the next day, or what passed for day, with only their lanterns for a sun,
not letting them stop for sleep until they were swaying in their saddles. Stone made a hard bed, but Leandrin roused them ruthlessly after a few hours, hardly waiting for them to mount before riding on. Ramps and bridges, islands and guidings. Egwene saw so many of them in that pitch dark that she lost count. She had long since lost any count of hours or of days. Leandrin allowed only brief halts to eat and rest the horses, and the darkness weighed down on their shoulders. They slumped in their saddles like sacks of grain, except for Leandrin. The Aes Sedai seemed unaffected by tiredness or the dark. She was as fresh as she had been back in the White Tower, and as cold. She would not let anyone glimpse the parchment she compared to the guidings, stuffing it away with a curt, "It is nothing you would understand," when Nynaeve asked. And then, while Egwene blinked wearily, Leandrin was riding away from a guiding, not toward another bridge or ramp, but down a pitted white line that led off into the darkness. Egwene stared at her friends, and then they all hurried to follow. Ahead, by the light of her lantern, the Aes Sedai was already removing the Avendasora leaf from the carvings on a waygate. "We are here," Leandrin said, smiling. "I have brought you at last to where you must go." Chapter 40. Damani. Egwene dismounted as the waygate opened, and when Leandrin motioned them through, she led the shaggy mare carefully out. Even so, she and Bella both stumbled in brush flattened by the opening waygate as they suddenly seemed to be moving even more slowly. A screen of dense shrubs had surrounded and hidden the waygate. There were only a few trees close by, and a morning breeze ruffled foliage with a little more color than the leaves had had in Tar Valon. Watching her friends emerge after her, she had been standing there a good minute before she became aware that others were already there, just out of sight on the other side of the gates. When she did notice them, she stared uncertainly. They were as odd a group as she had ever seen, and she had heard too many rumors of the war on Toman Head. Armored men, at least 50 of them, with overlapping steel plates down their chests and dull black helmets shaped like insects' heads, sat their saddles or stood beside their horses, staring at her and the emerging women, staring at the waygate, muttering among themselves. The only bareheaded man among them, a tall, dark-faced, hook-nosed fellow standing with a gilded and painted helmet on his hip, looked astonished at what he was seeing. There were women with the soldiers, too. Two wore plain, dark gray dresses and wide silver collars and stood staring intently at those coming out of the waygate, each with another woman close behind her as if ready to speak into her ear. Two other women, standing a little apart, wore wide, divided skirts that came well short of their ankles and panels embroidered with forked lightning bolts on their bosoms and skirts. Oddest of all was the last woman, reclining on a palanquin borne by 8 muscular, bare-chested men in baggy black trousers. The sides of her scalp were shaved, so that only a wide crest of black hair remained to fall down her back. A long, cream-colored robe worked in flowers and birds on blue ovals was carefully arranged to show her skirts of pleated white, and her fingernails were a good inch long, the first 2 on each hand lacquered blue. "Leandrin Sedai?" Egwene asked uneasily. "Do you know who these people are?" Her friends fingered their reins as if wondering whether to mount and run, but Leandrin replaced the Avendasora leaf and stepped forward confidently as the waygate began to close. "The High Lady Siroth?" Leandrin said, making it halfway between a question and statement. The woman on the palanquin nodded fractionally. "You are Leandrin." Her speech was slurred, and it took Egwene a moment to understand. "Aes Sedai," Siroth added, with a twist to her lips, and a murmur rose among the soldiers. "We must be done here quickly, Leandrin. There are patrols, and it would not do to be found. You would enjoy the attentions of the Seekers for Truth no more than I. I mean to be back in Falma before Turak knows I am gone."
"What are you talking about?" Nynaeve demanded. "What is she talking about, Leandrin?"
Leandrin laid a hand on Nynaeve's shoulder and one on Egwene's.
"These are the 2 of whom you were told, and there is another."
She nodded toward Elaine.
"She is the daughter heir of Andor."
The two women with the lightning on their dresses were approaching the party in front of the waygate. They carried coils of some silvery metal in their hands, Egwene noticed, and the bareheaded soldier came with them. He did not put a hand near the sword hilt sticking up above his shoulder, and he wore a casual smile, but Egwene still watched him narrowly. Leandrin gave no sign of agitation, otherwise Egwene would have jumped onto Bella right then.
"Leandrin Sedai," she said urgently, "who are these people? Are they here to help Rand and the others too?"
The hook-nosed man suddenly seized Min and Elaine by the scruffs of their necks, and in the next instant everything seemed to happen at once. The man yelled a curse and a woman screamed, or perhaps more than one woman, Egwene could not be sure. Abruptly the breeze was a gale that whipped away Leandrin's angry shouts in clouds of dirt and leaves and made the trees bend and groan. Horses reared and whinnied shrilly, and one of the women reached out and fastened something around Egwene's neck. Cloak flapping like a sail, Egwene braced against the wind and tugged at what felt like a collar of smooth metal. It would not budge. Under her frantic fingers it felt all of one piece, though she knew it had to have some kind of clasp. The silvery coils the woman had carried now trailed over Egwene's shoulder, their other end joining a bright bracelet on the woman's left wrist. Balling her fist tightly, Egwene hit the woman as hard as she could, right in her eye, and staggered and fell to her knees herself, head ringing. It felt as if a large man had struck her in the face. When she could see straight once more, the wind had died. A number of horses wandered loose, Bella and Elaine's mare among them, and some of the soldiers were cursing and picking themselves up off the ground. Leandrin was calmly brushing dust and leaves from her dress. Min knelt, supporting herself with her hands, groggily trying to rise further. The hook-nosed man stood over her, his hand dripping blood. Min's knife lay just out of her reach, the blade stained red along one side. Nynaeve and Elaine were nowhere to be seen, and Nynaeve's mare was gone, too. So were some of the soldiers and one of the pairs of women. The other two were still there, and Egwene could see now that they were linked by a silver cord, just like the one that still joined her to the woman standing over her. That woman was rubbing her cheek as she squatted beside Egwene. There was a bruise already coming up around her left eye. With long dark hair and big brown eyes, she was pretty, and perhaps as much as 10 years older than Nynaeve. "Your first lesson," she said emphatically. There was no animosity in her voice, but what almost sounded like friendliness. "I will not punish you further this time, since I should have been on guard with a newly caught Damani. Know this, you are a Damani, a leashed one, and I am a Suldam, a holder of the leash. When Damani and Suldam are joined, whatever hurt the Suldam feels, the Damani feels twice over, even to death. So you must remember that you may never strike at a Suldam in any way, and you must protect your Suldam even more than yourself. I am Rena. How are you called?"
"I am not what you said," Egwene muttered.
She pulled at the collar again. It gave no more than before. She thought of knocking the woman down and trying to pry the bracelet from her wrist, but rejected it. Even if the soldiers did not try to stop her, and so far they seemed to be ignoring her and Rena altogether, she had the sinking feeling the woman was telling the truth. Touching her left eye brought a wince. It did not feel puffy, so perhaps she was not actually growing a bruise to match Rena's, but it still hurt. Her left eye and Rena's left eye. She raised her voice.
"Leandrin Sedai, why are you letting them do this?"
Leandrin dusted her hands together, never looking in her direction.
"The very first thing you must learn," Rena said, "is to do exactly as you are told and without delay."
Egwene gasped. Suddenly her skin burned and prickled as if she had rolled in stinging nettles from the soles of her feet to her scalp. She tossed her head as the burning sensation increased.
"Many Suldam," Rena went on in that almost friendly tone, "do not believe Damani should be allowed names, or at least only names they are given. But I am the one who took you, so I will be in charge of your training, and I will allow you to keep your own name, if you do not displease me too far. I am mildly upset with you now. Do you really wish to keep on until I am angry?"
Quivering, Egwene gritted her teeth. Her nails dug into her palms with the effort of not scratching wildly.
"Idiot, it's only your name,"
Egwene, she managed to get out. I am Egwene Alvear.
Instantly, the burning itch was gone. She let out a long, unsteady breath.
Egwene, Renna said. That is a good name.
And to Egwene's horror, Renna patted her on the head as she would a dog. That, she realized, was what she had detected in the woman's voice. A certain goodwill for a dog in training, not quite the friendliness one might have toward another human being. Renna chuckled.
Now you are even angrier. If you intend to strike at me again, remember to make it a small blow, for you will feel it twice as hard as I. Do not attempt to channel. That you will never do without my express command.
Egwene's eye throbbed. She pushed herself to her feet and tried to ignore Renna, as much as it was possible to ignore someone who held a leash fastened to a collar around your neck. Her cheeks burned when the other woman chuckled again. She wanted to go to Min, but the amount of leash Renna had let out would not reach that far. She called softly,
Min, are you all right?
Sitting slowly back on her heels, Min nodded, then put a hand to her head as if she wished she had not moved it. Jagged lightning crackled across the clear sky, then struck among the trees some distance off. Egwene jumped and suddenly smiled. Nynaeve was still free, and Elaine. If anyone could free her and Min, Nynaeve could. Her smile faded into a glare for Leandrin. For whatever the reason the Aes Sedai had betrayed them, there would be a reckoning. Someday, somehow. The glare did no good. Leandrin did not look away from the palanquin. The bare-chested men knelt, lowering the palanquin to the ground, and Suroth stepped down, carefully arranging her robe, then picked her way to Leandrin on soft-slippered feet. The two women were much of a size. Brown eyes stared levelly into black.
You were to bring me two, Suroth said. Instead, I have only one, while two run loose, one of them more powerful by far than I had been led to believe. She will attract every patrol of ours within 2 leagues.
I brought you 3, Leandrin said calmly. If you cannot manage to hold them, perhaps our master should find another among you to serve him. You take fright at trifles. If patrols come, kill them. Lightning flashed again in the near distance, and moments later something roared like thunder not far from where it struck. A cloud of dust rose into the air. Neither Leandrin nor Suroth took any notice.
I could still return to Falma with 2 new Damani, Suroth said. It grieves me to allow an Aes Sedai, she twisted the words like a curse, to walk free.
Leandrin's face did not change, but Egwene saw a nimbus abruptly glow around her.
Beware, High Lady, Renna called. She stands ready.
There was a stir among the soldiers, a reaching for swords and lances, but Suroth only steepled her hands, smiling at Leandrin over her long nails.
You will make no move against me, Leandrin. Our master would disapprove, as I am surely needed here more than you, and you fear him more than you fear being made Damani.
Leandrin smiled, though white spots marked her cheeks with anger.
And you, Suroth, fear him more than you fear me, burning you to a cinder where you stand. Just so. We both fear him, yet even our master's needs will change with time. All Marath Damani will be leashed eventually. Perhaps I will be the one who places the collar around your lovely throat.
As you say, Suroth, our master's needs will change. I will remind you of it on the day when you kneel to me.
A tall leather leaf, perhaps a mile away, suddenly became a roaring torch.
This grows tiresome, Suroth said. Elbar, recall them.
The hook-nosed man produced a horn no bigger than his fist. It made a hoarse, piercing cry.
You must find the woman Nynaeve, Leandrin said sharply. Elaine is of no importance, but both the woman and this girl here must be taken with you on your ships when you sail.
I know very well what has been commanded, Marath Damani, though I would give much to know why.
However much you were told, child, Leandrin sneered.
That is how much you are allowed to know. Remember that you serve and obey. These two must be removed to the other side of the Arith Ocean and kept there. Suroth sniffed.
I will not remain here to find this Nynaeve. My usefulness to our master will be at an end if Turok hands me over to the Seekers for Truth.
Leandrin opened her mouth angrily, but Suroth refused to allow her a word.
The woman will not remain free for long. Neither of them will. When we sail again, we will take with us every woman on this miserable spit of land who can channel even slightly leashed and collared. If you wish to remain and search for her, do so. Patrols will be here soon, thinking to engage the rabble that still hides in the countryside. Some patrols take Damani with them, and they will not care what master you serve. Should you survive the encounter, the leash and collar will teach you a new life, and I do not believe our master will trouble to deliver one foolish enough to let herself be taken.
If either is allowed to remain here, Leandrin said tightly, our master will trouble himself with you, Suroth. Take them both or pay the price. She strode to the waygate, clutching the reins of her mare. Soon it was closing behind her. The soldiers who had gone after Nynaeve and Elaine came galloping back with the two women linked by leash, collar, and bracelet, the Damani and the Suldam riding side by side. Three men led horses with bodies across the saddles. Egwene felt a surge of hope when she realized the bodies all wore armor. They had not caught Nynaeve or Elaine, either one. Min started to rise to her feet, but the hook-nosed man planted a boot between her shoulder blades and drove her to the ground. Gasping for breath, she twitched there weakly.
I beg permission to speak, High Lady, he said.
Suroth made a small motion with her hand, and he went on.
This peasant cut me, High Lady. If the High Lady has no use for her...
Suroth motioned slightly again, already turning away, and he reached over his shoulder for the hilt of his sword.
No!
Egwene shouted. She heard Rena curse softly, and suddenly the burning itch covered her skin again, worse than before, but she did not stop.
Please! High Lady, please! She is my friend!
Pain such as she had never known racked her through the burning. Every muscle knotted and cramped. She pitched on her face in the dirt, mewling, but she could still see Elbar's heavy, curved blade come free of its sheath, see him raise it with both hands.
Please! Oh, Min!
Abruptly, the pain was gone as if it had never been. Only the memory remained. Suroth's blue velvet slippers, dirt-stained now, appeared in front of her face, but it was at Elbar that she stared. He stood there with his sword over his head and all his weight on the foot on Min's back, and he did not move.
This peasant is your friend, Suroth said.
Egwene started to rise, but at a surprised arching of Suroth's eyebrow, she remained lying where she was and only raised her head. She had to save Min. If it means groveling. She parted her lips and hoped her gritted teeth would pass for a smile.
Yes, my lady. And if I spare her, if I allow her to visit you occasionally, you will work hard and learn as you are taught? I will, High Lady.
She would have promised much more to keep that sword from splitting Min's skull. I'll even keep it, she thought sourly, as long as I have to.
Put the girl on her horse, Elbar, Suroth said. Tie her on if she cannot sit her saddle. If this Damani proves a disappointment, perhaps then I will let you have the head of the girl.
She was already moving toward her palanquin. Rena pulled Egwene roughly to her feet and pushed her toward Bella, but Egwene had eyes only for Min. Elbar was no gentler with Min than Rena with her, but she thought Min was all right. At least Min shrugged off Elbar's attempt to tie her across her saddle and climbed onto her gelding with only a little help. The odd party started off westward, with Suroth leading and Elbar slightly to the rear of her palanquin, but close enough to heed any summons immediately. Rena and Egwene rode at the back with Min, and the other Suldam and Damani behind the soldiers. The woman who had apparently meant to collar Nynaeve fondled the coiled silver leash she still carried and looked angry. Sparse forest covered the rolling land, and the smoke of the burning leather leaf was soon only a smudge in the sky behind them.
You were honored, Renna said after a time, having the High Lady speak to you. Another time I would let you wear a ribbon to mark the honor, but since you brought her attention on yourself... Egwene cried out as a switch seemed to lash across her back, then another across her leg, her arm. From every direction they seemed to come. She knew there was nothing to block, but she could not help throwing her arms about as if to stop the blows. She bit her lip to stifle her moans, but tears still rolled down her cheeks. Bella whinnied and danced, but Renna's grip on the silver leash kept her from carrying Egwene away. None of the soldiers even looked back.
"What are you doing to her?" Min shouted. "Egwene, stop it!"
"You live on sufferance. Min, is it?" Renna said mildly. "Let this be a lesson for you as well. So long as you try to interfere, it will not stop." Min raised a fist, then let it fall.
"I won't interfere. Only please stop it. Egwene, I'm sorry."
The unseen blows went on for a few moments more, as if to show Min her intervention had done nothing, then ceased. But Egwene could not stop shuddering. The pain did not go away this time. She pushed back the sleeve of her dress, thinking to see wheels. Her skin was unmarked, but the feel of them was still there. She swallowed.
"It was not your fault, Min."
Bella tossed her head, eyes rolling, and Egwene patted the mare's shaggy neck.
"It wasn't yours either."
"It was your fault, Egwene," Renna said. She sounded so patient, dealing so kindly with someone who was too dense to see the right, that Egwene wanted to scream. "When a Damani is punished, it is always her fault, even if she does not know why. A Damani must anticipate what her Suldam wants. But this time you do know why. Damani are like furniture or tools, always there, ready to be used, but never pushing themselves forward for attention. Especially not for the attention of one of the blood." Egwene bit her lip until she tasted blood. "This is a nightmare. It can't be real. Why did Leandrin do this? Why is this happening? May I ask a question?"
"Of me, you may," Renna smiled. "Many Suldam will wear your bracelet over the years. There are always many more Suldam than Damani, and some would have your hide in strips if you took your eyes off the floor or opened your mouth without permission. But I see no reason not to let you speak, so long as you are careful in what you say."
One of the other Suldam snorted loudly. She was linked to a pretty dark-haired woman in her middle years who kept her eyes on her hands. "Leandrin," Egwene would not give her the honorific, not ever again,
"and the High Lady spoke of a master they both serve."
The thought came into her head of a man with almost healed burns marring his face and eyes and mouth that sometimes turned to fire. But even if he was only a figure in her dreams, that seemed too horrible to contemplate.
"Who is he? What does he want with me and Min?"
She knew it was silly to avoid naming Nynaeve. She did not think any of these people would forget her just because her name was not mentioned, especially the blue-eyed Suldam stroking her empty leash, but it was the only way she could think of fighting back at the moment. "The affairs of the blood," Renna said, "are not for me to take notice of, and certainly not for you. The High Lady will tell me what she wishes me to know, and I will tell you what I wish you to know. Anything else that you hear or see must be to you as if it never was said, as if it never happened. This way lies safety, most especially for a Damani. Damani are too valuable to be killed out of hand, but you might find yourself not only soundly punished, but absent a tongue to speak or hands to write. Damani can do what they must without these things." Egwene shivered, though the air was not very cold. Pulling her cloak up onto her shoulders, her hand brushed the leash, and she jerked at it fitfully.
"This is a horrible thing. How can you do this to anyone? What diseased mind ever thought of it?"
The blue-eyed Suldam with the empty leash growled,
"This one could do without her tongue already, Renna."
Renna only smiled patiently.
"How is it horrible? Could we allow anyone to run loose who can do what a Damani can?
Sometimes men are born who would be Marastamani if they were women. It is so here also, I have heard. And they must be killed, of course, but the women do not go mad. Better for them to become Damani than make trouble contending for power. As for the mind that first thought of the Aedam, it was the mind of a woman who called herself Aes Sedai. Egwene knew incredulity must be painting her face because Rena laughed openly. When Luthair Peyondrag Maundwin, son of the Hawkwing, first faced the armies of the night, he found many among them who called themselves Aes Sedai. They contended for power among themselves and used the one power on the field of battle. One such, a woman named Diyne, who thought she could do better serving the Emperor. He was not Emperor then, of course, since he had no Aes Sedai in his armies, came to him with a device she had made, the first Aedam, fastened to the neck of one of her sisters. Though that woman did not want to serve Luthair, the Aedam required her to serve. Diyne made more Aedam. The first Suldam were found, and women captured who called themselves Aes Sedai discovered that they were in fact only Marastamani, those who must be leashed. It is said that when she herself was leashed, Diyne's screams shook the towers of midnight. But of course she too was a Marastamani, and Marastamani cannot be allowed to run free. Perhaps you will be one of those who has the ability to make Aedam. If so, you will be pampered, you may rest assured. Egwene looked yearningly at the countryside through which they rode. The land was beginning to rise in low hills, and the thin forest had dwindled to scattered thickets, but she was sure she could lose herself in them. "Am I supposed to look forward to being pampered like a pet dog?" she said bitterly. "A lifetime of being chained to men and women who think I am some kind of animal?" "Not men," Rena chuckled. "All Suldam are women. If a man put on this bracelet, most of the time it would be no different than if it were hanging on a peg on the wall." "And sometimes," the blue-eyed Suldam put in harshly, "you and he would both die screaming." The woman had sharp features and a tight, thin-lipped mouth, and Egwene realized that anger was apparently her permanent expression. "From time to time, the Empress plays with lords by linking them to a Damani. It makes the lord sweat and entertains the court of the Nine Moons. The lord never knows until it is done whether he will live or die, and neither does the Damani." Her laugh was vicious. "Only the Empress can afford to waste Damani in such a way, Alwyn," Rena snapped. "And I do not mean to train this Damani only to have her thrown away." "I have not seen any training at all so far, Rena. Only a great deal of chatter, as if you and this Damani were girlhood friends." "Perhaps it is time to see what she can do," Rena said, studying Egwene. "Do you have enough control yet to channel at that distance?" She pointed to a tall oak standing alone on a hilltop. Egwene frowned at the tree, perhaps half a mile from the line followed by the soldiers and Suroth's palanquin. She had never tried anything much beyond arm's reach, but she thought it might be possible. "I don't know," she said. "Try," Rena told her. "Feel the tree. Feel the sap in the tree. I want you to make it all not only hot, but so hot that every drop of sap in every branch flashes to steam in an instant. Do it." Egwene was shocked to discover an urge to do as Rena commanded. She had not channeled or even touched Saidar in 2 days. The desire to fill herself with the one power made her shiver. In half a heartbeat, she discarded, "will not." The wheels that were not there still burned too sharply for her to be quite that foolish. "Cannot," she finished instead. "It is too far, and I've never done anything like that before." One of the Suldam laughed raucously, and Alwyn said, "She never even tried." Rena shook her head almost sadly. "When one has been a Suldam long enough," she told Egwene, "one learns to tell many things about Damani even without the bracelet. But with the bracelet, one can always tell whether a Damani has tried to channel. You must never lie to me or to any Suldam, not even by a hair." Suddenly, the invisible switches were back, striking at her everywhere. Yelling, she tried to hit Renna, but the Suldam casually knocked her fist away, and Egwene felt as if Renna had hit her arm with a stick. She dug her heels into Bella's flanks, but the Suldam's grip on the leash nearly pulled her out of her saddle. Frantically, she reached for Saidar, meaning to hurt Renna enough to make her stop, just the kind of hurt she herself had been given. The Suldam shook her head wryly. Egwene howled as her own skin was suddenly scalded. Not until she fled from Saidar completely did the burn begin to fade, and the unseen blows never ceased or slowed. She tried to shout that she would try if only Renna would stop, but all she could manage was to scream and writhe. Dimly, she was aware of Min shouting angrily and trying to ride to her side, of Alwyn tearing Min's reins from her hands, of another Suldam speaking sharply to her Damani, who looked at Min. And then Min was yelling too, arms flapping as if trying to ward off blows or beat away stinging insects. In her own pain, Min seemed distant. Their cries together were enough to make some of the soldiers twist in their saddles. After one look, they laughed and turned back. How Suldam dealt with Damani was no affair of theirs. To Egwene, it seemed to go on forever, but at last there was an end. She lay sprawled weakly across the cantle of her saddle, cheeks wet with tears, sobbing into Bella's mane. The mare whickered uneasily. "It is good that you have spirit," Renna said calmly. "The best Damani are those who have spirit to be shaped and molded." Egwene squeezed her eyes shut. She wished she could close her ears, too, to shut out Renna's voice. "I have to get away. I have to, but how? Nynaeve, help me. Light, somebody, help me." "You will be one of the best," Renna said in tones of satisfaction. Her hand stroked Egwene's hair, a mistress soothing her dog. Nynaeve leaned out of her saddle to peer around the screen of prickly-leafed shrubs. Scattered trees met her eyes, some with leaves turning color. The expanses of grass and brush between seemed empty. Nothing moved that she could see except the thinning column of smoke wavering in a breeze from the leather leaf. That had been her work, the leather leaf, and once the lightning called from a clear sky, and a few other things she had not thought to try until those two women tried them on her. She thought they must work together in some way, though she could not understand their relation to each other, apparently leashed as they were. One wore a collar, but the other was chained as surely as she. What Nynaeve was sure of was that one or both were Aes Sedai. She had never had a clear enough sight of them to see the glow of channeling, but it had to be. "I'll certainly take pleasure in telling Shiriam about them," she thought dryly. "Aes Sedai don't use the power as a weapon, do they?" She certainly had. She had at least knocked the two women down with that lightning stroke, and she had seen one of the soldiers, or his body, rather, burn from the ball of fire she made and hurled at them. But she had not seen any of the strangers at all in some time now. Sweat beaded on her forehead, and it was not all from exertion. Her contact with Saidar was gone, and she could not bring it back. In that first fury of knowing that Leandrin had betrayed them, Saidar had been there almost before she knew it, the one power flooding her. It had seemed she could do anything, and as long as they had chased her, rage at being hunted like an animal had fueled her. Now the chase had vanished. The longer she had gone without seeing an enemy at whom she could strike, the more she had begun to worry that they might be sneaking up on her somehow, and the more she had had time to worry about what was happening to Egwene, and Elaine and Min. Now she was forced to admit that what she felt most was fear. Fear for them, fear for herself. It was anger she needed. Something stirred behind a tree. Her breath caught, and she fumbled for Saidar, but all the exercises Shiriam and the others had taught her, all the blossoms unfolding in her mind, all the imagined streams that she held like riverbanks, did no good. She could feel it, sense the source, but she could not touch it. Elaine stepped from behind the tree in a wary crouch, and Nynaeve sagged with relief. The daughter heir's dress was dirty and torn, her golden hair was a tangle of snarls and leaves, and her searching eyes were as wide as those of a frightened fawn, but she held her short-bladed dagger in a steady hand. Nynaeve picked up her reins and rode into the open. Elaine gave a convulsive jump, then her hand went to her throat and she drew a deep breath. Nynaeve dismounted and the two women hugged, taking comfort in having found each other.
"For a moment," Elaine said as they finally stepped away, "I thought you were... Do you know where they are? There were two men following me. Another few minutes and they would have caught me, but a horn sounded and they turned their horses and galloped off. They could see me, Nynaeve, and they just left."
"I heard it too, and I haven't seen any of them since. Have you seen Egwene or Min?"
Elaine shook her head, slumping to sit on the ground.
"Not since. That man hit Min, knocked her down, and one of those women was trying to put something around Egwene's neck. I saw that much before I ran. I don't think they got away, Nynaeve. I should have done something. Min cut the hand that was holding me, and Egwene... I just ran, Nynaeve. I realized I was free, and I ran. Mother had better marry Gareth Breen and have another daughter as soon as she can. I'm not fit to take the throne."
"Don't be a goose," Nynaeve said sharply. "Remember, I have a packet of sheep's tongue root among my herbs." Elaine had her head in her hands. The jibe did not even produce a murmur. "Listen to me, girl. Did you see me stay to fight 20 or 30 armed men, not to mention the Aes Sedai? If you had waited, the most likely thing by far is that you would be a prisoner too, if they didn't just kill you. They seemed to be interested in Egwene and me for some reason. They might not have cared whether you remained alive or not."
"Why are they interested in Egwene and me? Why us in particular? Why did Leandrin do this? Why?"
She had no more answers now than she had had the first time she asked herself these questions.
"If I had died trying to help them," Elaine began, "you'd be dead. And little good you'd be then to yourself or them. Now get on your feet and brush off your dress."
Nynaeve rummaged in her saddlebags for a hairbrush. "And fix your hair." Elaine got up slowly and took the brush with a small laugh.
"You sound like Lini, my old nurse."
She began to run the brush through her hair, wincing as tangles pulled.
"But how are we going to help them, Nynaeve? You may be as strong as a full sister when you are angry, but they have women who can channel too. I cannot think their Aes Sedai, but they might as well be. We do not even know in which direction they took them."
"West," Nynaeve said. "That creature Suroth mentioned Falma, and that's as far west on Toman Head as you can go. We will go to Falma. I hope Leandrin is there. I will make her curse the day her mother laid eyes on her father. But first I think we had better find some clothes of the country. I've seen Tara Bonner and Domani women in the tower, and what they wear is nothing like what we have on. We would stand out in Falma as strangers."
"I would not mind a Domani dress, though mother would surely have a fit if she ever found out I'd worn one, and Lini would never let me hear the end of it. But even if we find a village, can we afford new dresses? I have no idea how much money you have, but I have only 10 gold marks and perhaps twice that in silver. That will keep us 2 or 3 weeks, but I don't know what we will do after that."
"A few months as a novice in Tar Valon," Nynaeve said, laughing, "has not stopped you thinking like the heir to a throne. I don't have a tenth what you do, but altogether it will keep us 2 or 3 months in comfort. Longer, if we are careful. I have no intention of buying us dresses, and they won't be new in any case. My gray silk dress will do us some good with all those pearls and that gold thread. If I can't find a woman who will trade us each 2 or 3 sturdy changes for that, I will give you this ring and I will be the novice." She swung up into her saddle and reached a hand down to pull Elaine up behind her.
"What are we going to do when we reach Falma?" Elaine asked as she settled on the mare's rump.
"I won't know that until we are there." Nynaeve paused, letting the horse stand.
"Are you sure you want to do this?
It will be dangerous."
"More dangerous than it is for Egwene and Min? They would come after us if our circumstances were reversed. I know they would."
"Are we going to stay here all day?" Elaine dug her heels in and the mare started off. Nynaeve turned the horse until the sun, still short of its noonday crest, shone at their backs. "We are going to have to be cautious. The Aes Sedai we know can recognize a woman who can channel just by being within arm's length of her,
These Aes Sedai may be able to pick us out of a crowd if they are looking for us, and we had better assume they are.
They were certainly looking for Egwene and me, but why?
Yes, cautious. You were right before, too. We will not do them any good letting ourselves be caught as well.
Elaine was silent for a moment.
Do you think it was all lies, Nynaeve? What Leandrin told us about Rand being in danger and the others? Aes Sedai do not lie.
It was Nynaeve's turn to be silent, remembering Shiriam telling her of the oaths a woman took on being raised to full sisterhood, oaths spoken inside a Terangreal that bound her to keep them, to speak no word that is not true. That was one, but everyone knew that the truth an Aes Sedai said might not be the truth you thought you heard.
I expect Rand is warming his feet in front of Lord Agilmar's fire in Fal'dara this minute, she said.
I can't worry about him now. I have to think about Egwene and Min.
I suppose he is, Elaine said with a sigh. She shifted behind the saddle. If it is very far to Falma, Nynaeve, I expect to ride in the saddle half the time. This is not a very comfortable seat. We will never reach Falma at all if you let this horse set her own pace the whole way.
Nynaeve booted the mare to a quick trot, and Elaine yelped and caught at her cloak. Nynaeve told herself that she would take a turn riding behind and not complain if Elaine put the horse to a gallop, but for the most part she ignored the gasps of the woman bouncing behind her. She was too busy hoping that by the time they reached Falma, she could stop being afraid and start being angry. The breeze freshened, cool and brisk, with a hint of cold yet to come.